6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
At Ritual, Mother's Day is kind of a big deal, and we're celebrating accordingly. Find your ritual. If mom needs a bit of stress relief, digestive support, or is looking to support glowy, smooth skin, do it today with 40% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/podcast. That's ritual.com/podcast for 40% off your first month. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hey guys, it's Allie. Welcome back to Infertile AF, the podcast. This is episode 326 called Lana Manikowski. This episode is brought to you by Belly. Are you thinking about growing your family? Whether you're just starting to plan or are actively trying to conceive, preconception health is key. That's where Belly comes in. Belly has vitamins to help both women and men optimize their health before pregnancy. With essential nutrients like folate, iodine, and zinc, Belly ensures your body is ready for this exciting next step. Belly goes beyond basic vitamins. Their unique formula supports reproductive health, hormone balance, and fertility, all while being made with the highest quality ingredients. Plus, Belly is created with only clean ingredients so that you can rest assured that you are making a safe choice for you and your future little one. When it comes to starting your family, take the first step with Belly. Give yourself and your future baby the best foundation for a healthy start. Visit bellybaby.com today and use code IAF15 for 15% off your first order. That's bellybaby.com, BELIBABY, for a healthier tomorrow. Belly Baby, because healthy beginnings start here. Thanks, Belly. All right, guys, before we dive in with Lana, I want to invite anybody listening to check out Fertility Rally, which is the support group and community that Blair Nelson and I created in 2020. We have support groups, we have private Facebook groups, we have events, IRL and virtual. We have some really fun stuff coming up later this year as well, but it's basically the place I wish I had when I was going through it. Everybody is welcome to join no matter what you're going through. There's so many different paths and so many different journeys, and everyone is welcome. So if you want to check out a group, DM me at Fertility Rally on Instagram or Infertile AF Stories on Instagram. You can check it out before you commit to anything. You can also find out more at fertilityrally.com. Also, in the name of normalizing conversations around ART, infertility, loss, all the things, check out my children's book, which is called Work of Art. It's on my website at infertileafgroup.com. And the book tells my family's story about secondary infertility and having my son through IVF. It is a book I feel like every family needs to have, no matter what, even if you don't have a kid who is born through ART, because I think, again, just normalizing this and showing that there's so many different ways that families can be built is so important. So it's called Work of Art. It's at infertileafgroup.com. Okay, so, oh my God, Lana Manikowski, I love her. She is a Chicagoan. We have a kinship there. Beginning of the conversation here, we're talking about local grocery stores and things in Chicago. But she's just amazing. She's a big voice in the community, and her whole MO is helping goal-driven, infertile women thrive and feel fulfilled without the children they thought they'd have. So Lana's going to tell us her whole story, how she went through an infertility journey and then pivoted and said, you know what? I'm going to have a happy ending that does not involve children, and I'm going to thrive. Lana also has a book out called So Now What? Create a life you love without the children you always dreamed of. I love talking to her. I think you guys are really going to enjoy this convo. Without further ado, this is Lana's infertility story. Hi, Lana. How are you? It's so good to talk to you.
Oh, so good to talk to you, my fellow Chicagoan.
I was just going to say, I'm so jealous that you're in your Chicago high rise right now, my hometown. I miss it a lot. I'm really excited to share your whole story. We're going to start at the beginning. I want to hear about sex education for you. What did you learn growing up about fertility, infertility, having babies, all that stuff?
Oh, well, I learned not to have a baby.
Right.
I learned about your period and I learned don't have premarital sex. Really, besides that, that was it.
I didn't even know what like IVF was or infertility. It was just it wasn't even in my realm of comprehension until I found myself in the middle of it. Was that how it was for you too?
Yeah, totally. I didn't know anyone that openly ever talked about it. So yeah. And I think I also had that assumption that you should assume to get pregnant when you stop trying not to get pregnant. When you find the person of your dreams and you get married, then it just, you know, the magic wand happens and
right.
There you go.
Yeah. So growing up, were you the type of person who always wanted to have kids?
I did. I was the one that at family events or at, you know, social events, I was always taking care of people's kids. I was like the call-in babysitter whenever someone was going out, you know, on a date night. I was the one in the neighborhood that everyone liked to book because I had so much fun hanging out with the kids when I was a teenager.
You were like the cool babysitter.
I was. Yeah.
Yes.
We brought fun activities and
yes.
And yeah, I don't think it was like the top of my list of things to do, but I knew that it was something that I really wanted at some point in my life.
Okay. So fast forwarding a whole bunch, tell me about when you met your husband and did you guys talk about what kind of family you know, wanted to have and your dreams for the future and all that?
We did. Yeah. Well, I met my husband. I was 32. We got married when I was 35. So I was at that point where I was finally ready to start having the babies. So I felt like it was important to have that conversation with him as my boyfriend at the time and make sure we were on the same page. And beyond that, we just, you know, thought we'd get married and it'd start happening for us.
Right. I think so many people, including myself, you just kind of think that when you're ready and it's going to happen. So what happened when you guys started to try?
Well, we started to try, and after 2 years, I know this, it sounds almost embarrassing to admit how clueless I was about this. I remember having a conversation with a girlfriend of mine. I was shopping at Jewel. You'll know Jewel.
Oh my God, Jewel Osco. The Jewels, as Jewels. Some elder yeah. statesmen call it. Yes.
Yes, of course. Everything with an S. I was at the Jewels, and on the phone with her, I remember I was in the cracker aisle, and we were talking about, you know, having kids. And she pointedly asked me if we were planning on having kids. And I told her, you know, I've been trying and it just hasn't happened yet. And she's like, well, how long? And I said, about 2 years. And she said, well, you know, I had both the babes, you know, she has two kids through IVF, you know, have you thought about talking to somebody? And that was really, Allie, like the first time that something went off in my brain that I need to like talk to somebody. And mm-hmm. It was like, I was 37 at the time.
Wow.
And I had never thought about that before. So that was really my light bulb that maybe I needed to figure out, like, should I look into this further?
Yeah. I feel like, thank you for admitting that, you know, I'm kind of the same way. And like we were saying, like not knowing what you don't know until you're in the middle of it. You know, I think there's a lot of people who just kind of assume it's going to go one way until it doesn't go that way. So what was happening for those 2 years? You guys just weren't getting pregnant, or did you ever have any like losses or anything like that? Or,
you know, in my whole time of trying, I never had one positive pregnancy test.
Okay.
So to my knowledge, I was never pregnant, but I did do, you know, ovulation tracking. I would, you know, make sure that we were trying to have intercourse, you know, during the ovulation periods. But mm-hmm. yeah, beyond that, it was just a bunch of trying.
Okay. So when you're in the cracker aisle at Jewel, mm-hmm. did you, at that point, were you like, okay, so I need to go see someone. I need to talk to a specialist.
Yes.
Okay.
And she was like, I'll give you the name of my doctor. It was here at Northwestern, which, mm-hmm. you know, I was lucky being in a big city. There's a lot of access to great care here. So I felt like I was supported as far as if that place was recommended by my friend. I felt like it was a trustworthy yeah. place to go. So she helped me, you know, get in touch with the nurse. Like she really was the pivotal person mm-hmm. who encouraged me, like, get on this. And, you know, a lot of people are like worried to bring up the conversation with a friend and things like that. But I think about if she never brought it up, like how much longer would I have waited?
Yeah. I was thinking that as well.
Just going to happen.
Right. Thank God you needed crackers that day or whatever you were shopping for. Yes. So was your Triscuits? Oh my God. I love a Triscuit. So was your husband on the same page as you in terms of going to see somebody?
Yeah, he was very encouraging of it. I led the way. You know, he was kind of throughout the whole path. It was sort of like he put me first as far as what I was wanting and what we were doing. But yeah, he was definitely on board with whatever we needed to do.
Okay. So what happened when you went in?
They did the whole, all the new lingo, AMH, FSH, all these things that I had like no clue were even things to monitor for with a female. And it felt like a ton of bricks, like to have all these terminologies thrown at you. Besides that one friend, I think I knew one other person who had talked openly in my friend group about going through IVF. So it all felt really foreign and overwhelming, but I was like, all right, like, let's do this. So we started with IUIs and we did, I want to say it was close to 7 of them because wow. Yeah. And again, you don't know, right?
Sure.
There was part of the process that I was like, oh, well, this would be great if it happened in some semblance of a natural form.
Right. Because it's kind of like a baby step, right? Like in some regard. Before you did the IUIs though, Lana, did they give you any sort of diagnosis or like what did they find when they did the workups and did they look at your husband as well?
They did. Yeah.
Okay.
Husband was, you know, fine and high-fiving with the lab when they got his results back. I was like, right. Okay, great. But yeah, they gave me the diagnosis, which I don't know if it's considered a real diagnosis in my opinion, but unexplained.
Unexplained. Okay. So then you did the IUIs and 7. I mean, that's a lot. That's a lot of time. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of, you know, disappointment. What was going through your mind as you were going through all of those? You know, you do one, maybe the first time it's like, okay, well, we'll try again. But then, you know, after time and again, like it weighs on you, right?
Yeah, it did. But there was something that I think it was just my type A personality, like keep pushing, do another one, it's going to be the next one. I feel like I had this belief that it was just going to work for me. And if I kept pushing and doing, something might change.
Okay. So at any point was the medical team like, we should move on to IVF, this isn't happening? Or what was your mindset with that and like the path forward?
Yeah, they did. They were very forthcoming with like next steps, but it was a matter of also like, what are you comfortable with as the patient?
And right.
Was I an informed patient to have been making that decision to do that 7 times? Like in hindsight, it would have been nice if someone was like, hey, you know, let's bust a move to something else because, you know, here I'm nearing 40, right? You know, I was probably, you know, by the time I finished my 7th, I was 38. And then it was like, okay, we need to transition to something else. But I think they prided themselves on letting the patient feel comfortable in their journey. But I think at the same time, it would have been nice if there would have been somebody who was strong holding my arm a little bit.
Yeah, that makes sense. I get that. Okay. So then what happened after the 7?
Then we started IVF and I did 2 rounds. The first round, we did a fresh transfer. And during the fresh transfer, the embryo got stuck in the catheter. I remember that was something that I didn't realize at the time how traumatic that would have been to the embryo. But when they do the transfer, they then, if someone's ever been awake for this or noticed this, they'll take the catheter to embryology. They'll check the catheter to make sure it's clear. And I remember the doctor telling me like, oh, hang on, we got to send the catheter just to make sure it's clear. It's part of, you know, routine, never an issue. And then he came back and said, oh, the embryo is still in there. We need to continue. So in my brain, I was like, oh, okay. And then as I thought about it more, I'm like, yeah, well, that can't be a good thing.
Oh my gosh. Wait, yeah. That's the first I've ever heard of this happening, Lana. Yeah. It's so... Wow. That's, again, it's one of those things that you don't even think could be a factor in this whole process, right?
Yeah. And I, you know, they put it, I mean, this was a matter of minutes, right? It's not like it was like a 40-minute waiting period. Embryology, right. I think, is just like on the other side of the wall. And they passed the catheter, would probably do a quick check. And then when they saw that it was in there, he came back and then reinserted the catheter and then put the embryo in. And okay. I was like, okay, like this is going to work. You know, sure. I didn't think that there could have been some damage done or what might, you know, was there a timing issue between how long it was, you know, out and in. And yeah, so that one didn't take.
Have you gotten any more information now in retrospect from experts or anything like saying like they shouldn't have continued or like not to doctor shame or, you know, your medical team, whatever. But you know what I mean? Like if somebody was saying, oh, if that had happened, maybe they should have just done another one like at a different time or something like that. Did you get any more info?
You know, I didn't. I just kind of powered through. It was sort of like my first one.
Yeah, so I get it.
I didn't know that I should be looking into something more. And now in hindsight, I'm sort of like, I'm just moving forward. I just don't want to put a lot of energy on what could have gone differently because I can't change the outcome anyway.
So. That makes tons of sense. Absolutely. Okay. So backing up a little bit before that transfer, how were you with like the meds and retrieval and like, how did all that go?
It was hard. It was really hard to navigate the timeline of everything. I don't think I was prepared for the last minute everythings and the morning monitoring appointments and fitting all that into my day. Mm-hmm. And then the medications really, I gained a lot of weight. So I was just not comfortable in my body. I felt like my stomach was this pincushion. I was, you know, just of course bruised all over. And I felt like it was this out of body experience that I was willing to do because my eye was on the prize of having a baby. So I was like, okay, like, yeah, this sucks, but this is part of the plan. Like, this is what we're going to do. And I kept it a secret from my employers that I was going through IVF, which I think added another layer of stress for me. Mm-hmm. I remember I would try to be the first one in line for the monitoring appointments because, you know, the doors opened at 6:30 and it was literally like Lollapalooza tickets went on sale and everyone would like storm in. I mean, it was like
100%.
And there, like, you had to grab a number. So keep in mind, this was in what, 2011, right? So it was before things were more automated. And it was literally like you were at the deli counter in the Jewels.
At the Jewels, getting your shaved ham. Yeah.
And I would be like, oh my God, I hope I'm one or two because I didn't want to be late for work because my employer didn't know. So I would just start my day off with this stress of
so stressful
the schedule.
And so time consuming too, to get there, you know, be there when the doors open. Yeah.
And there was just this panic of like, oh my gosh, like, I hope I get all this done. And then I could just like show up to work and act like I just had my morning coffee and put fresh face and makeup on and showed up at work.
How was your mental state like going through all this? Because now it's been a couple of years, right? With all the IUIs and then that first round of IVF, the first transfer. How are you doing like mentally?
I felt very exhausted because I was such an actor in my life. I didn't talk about going through IVF with a lot of people because I had a lot of shame that I needed to go through it. I was used to being a really successful person in most things that, you know, my job and socially, and I just had this like really great life. And then when IVF and infertility showed its way to me, I felt like I was, I don't know if the right way would say like almost failing at life, that I couldn't do this thing that my body was just, I thought, designed to do. So for me, I felt very exhausted because I would go to work events and friend events and ethnic events in our community. And I just felt like I always had to act like my life was perfect. And I was falling apart inside. So I was very exhausted.
It's so hard because, you know, we've talked about this a million times, but somebody might be listening to this for the first time. So I'll repeat it again. You know, this is one of the very few areas of life where you can do all the things. You can work as hard as you can. You know, you can like cross all the T's and dot all the I's, but you can still not come out with the result that you want. And that is so hard to wrap your head around, especially if, like you said, if you've been successful in your career or in your life in other areas, because it's always like you work hard, you get success, but that's not like this. So was that like a mind fuck for you?
Total. Yeah. Like, how could I figure out everything in my life except this thing that everyone else does so easily? You know, and I felt like I was lacking. And then I'd have these tinges of jealousy to the people around me that were getting pregnant. And then I was like, oh my God, what an awful person. Like,
yes.
Yeah, like there was so much self-judgment that went into emotions that came with it. And I was like, God, I'm a fucking horrible person.
Yes. I remember thinking the same exact thing. And it's so common. And thank you so much for sharing that. Cause it's especially if you're like a good person, right? And you like want to be supportive of your friends, but to feel that jealousy. And I remember being like, what is this? Who am I? Like, this isn't how I normally would feel. Like, and then you feel like an intruder in your own mind. It's like, it's such a spiral. It's so hard to deal with mentally, I feel like.
Yeah. And I think also too, like having that dream of like your friends getting pregnant and you having kids together and being right. like, oh my God, they're like ahead of me. And so then there was this like panic of,
yep,
I better hurry up because, you know, our kids aren't going to be able to be like best friends like we are. Like all these things that put this sense of panic on me that I needed to hurry up and figure this out. It was mm-hmm. like, that just kind of resonates in my head of like thinking that I needed to figure out how to do something differently than I was doing, even though I was going to the best places for care and I had a really good access to care. Luckily, you know, my husband and I, we were living in a city, in a state that had four rounds covered. So we were able to get like a plan so we can get insurance covered. So it was like, I felt like I was able to do all these resourceful things except the thing that I was supposed to do, which was get pregnant.
Right. Absolutely. That's perfectly said. So what happened after that first transfer that was not successful?
Yeah, I did the 2-week wait, you know, thinking, oh, this is going to happen. And of course, it did not. And then we did another round there. And I don't know, I just sort of like nothing survived past day 5. Mm. So there was nothing to transfer. And after the IUIs of, you know, 7 of those and then 2 IVFs, I was kind of like, I don't know, maybe I'm just going to take a break. Mm-hmm. And so I did. I was like, okay, this might be off the table. I might just not go back to this, but I never had that conversation with my doctors. I just sort of never showed up again and they never called to check in.
Mm, and then, interesting.
Yeah. And then it was about a year later, my one girlfriend, she had already had one child on her own. She started going to a different clinic in Colorado and we both lived in Chicago. And I remember I was having a conversation with her and she was like, you know, I really think you should try going here. It's so much different. Like the energy, not being at home and working and mm-hmm. trying to fit it into your day. There's something that's really relaxing about going out there. So that's when I considered going through it again. So here, there was 2 people in my life who had gone through IVF that were really my people who pushed me to do this. And mm-hmm. I don't think I took enough opportunity to recognize like how impactful that was for them to have said something to me. Cause I don't know how long I would have just sat there thinking, I'll figure it out eventually. You know, would mm-hmm. I have waited another year to try again? But it right. was that pointed conversation where I was like, okay, I'll do this. So then we decided to fly out to Colorado mm-hmm. and then we did 3 rounds in Colorado. And
okay. So what's the process when you go out to Colorado, like logistically? You stay out there the whole time or are you flying back and forth or like how did it look for you?
For me, I would do my monitoring here. So okay. they would send me my protocols. I would do my initial monitoring here. And when they saw that I was having enough of a response, then I'd get on a flight and fly out there and then do the tail end of my monitoring and the retrieval. Mm-hmm. in Colorado. And we weren't doing any fresh transfers at that point. It was just banking enough to have some frozen embryos that we could hopefully have then implanted at the end.
Okay. So, yeah,
so it was nice because I was outside of my regular place of work. And when right. I fly out there, I'd usually go out there for probably about 6 to 7 days. And so the early part I would go by myself and then my husband would come out and we made like the best of it. You know, we'd rent a car and we'd go for day trips and
right.
it was a really nice change for my nervous system to not be uh-huh. adding all that to my regular days here in Chicago.
Yeah. And what were you still not telling work what was going on or did you eventually have to say?
I eventually told my manager. Yeah. But uh-huh. very begrudgingly because there was, yeah, I think part of me was like, oh, they know my secret. They know that I can't get pregnant on my own. And I felt a lot of shame about that. Mm. But also I worried about my advancement in the workplace. And are they going to look over, you know, me as a candidate because they think, oh, well, she's going to end up being on maternity leave. Like mm-hmm. I had a lot of anxiousness about sharing too much with too many people because I thought that I would never advance in my job and get promoted.
Yeah. I think that's a legit concern that so many of us women have, you know, in the workplace, unfortunately. And, you know, again, thanks for sharing that. Cause I'm sure there's somebody listening who's like, yes, I'm going through that right now. Same thing, you know?
Yeah. It's hard to, and there's a lot of lack of conversation, I think, in the workplace and support. And I don't know if it's from my HR perspective of you can't say so much, or is it that they just don't have the proper channels mm-hmm. in place to support patients that are going through fertility treatments. And with one in six people having an infertility diagnosis at some point in their life, like there needs to be better support available to us going through IVF in the workplace.
A million percent. Okay. So you said you did three rounds out in Colorado.
Yes.
How did that end up? Like, what was the result after the third?
This episode is brought to you by Happy Mammoth. Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're definitely not alone. There are more than 1,000 hormone disruptors living rent-free in our environment right now, in our food, our water, the air we breathe, the clothes we wear, our skincare, and they all mess with our hormones. The good news? We don't have to suffer through any of it anymore because now we have Hormone Harmony, a formula made only with herbal ingredients that are shown to reduce hormonal symptoms in women of all ages. Hormone Harmony is not just a hormone-supporting supplement. It's become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it on social media. In fact, a bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. And the biggest benefit? Feeling like myself again. That's what women mention over and over in their reviews. And there are more than 30,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony. Okay, guys, so here is the very exciting news. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code INFERTILEF at checkout. Again, that's happymammoth.com and use the code INFERTILEF for 15% off. Thanks, Happy Mammoth. This episode is brought to you by My Life in a Book. Are you thinking about sending someone a truly special gift? Let me tell you about mylifeinabook.com. It's a unique service that turns your loved one's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty cool, right? Here's how it works. Every week, mylifeinabook.com will send your loved one a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about their life or any custom questions you wish to ask. And then your loved one can either type their response or use their voice-to-text feature. MyLifeInABook.com compiles all of their responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using your loved one's voice recordings. It's like preserving their voice and stories for eternity. Imagine discovering stories about your loved one's youth, adventures, and the challenges they overcame. This book becomes a legacy, something you and future generations can cherish forever. Your loved one has given you a lifetime of stories, and this is your chance to give them a way to share them. So guys, I received mylifeinabook.com to try, and I decided to gift it to my mother-in-law for an upcoming Mother's Day gift. Don't tell her, and I hope she's not listening to this. But it's so easy to use, and they walk you through everything you need to do, and it creates a unique gift like no other. It's so cool and exciting to have something like this that we can cherish forever. So here's the best part. You can check out mylifeinabook.com and use code INFERTILEAF at checkout for 15% off. If you want to create an unforgettable gift for your loved one, there's really no other way to go. Go to mylifeinabook.com and use code INFERTILEAF for 15% off today. Thanks, My Life in a Book.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
So at the end of three rounds, I had one frozen embryo, and that was from my first round that I did out there. So mm-hmm. nothing that I was able to bank from any of the other rounds. And when we got to the end of that third round, my doctor was like, I just want to be honest. I think that we probably should consider stopping, you know, just knowing your response rates have been the way that they are. I mean, if you want to go and do another one, I'm happy to support you in that. But I just think that the outcomes are not going to be any different. And so that was really, I think, what I needed to hear in order to recognize that I just can't keep pushing for something. So I really appreciated his honesty in that conversation, even though it was a really hard thing to hear. So then, you know, he told me the process would be, we'll thaw the embryo because I wanted to do genetic testing. To me, that was really important because at this point I was in my 40s and I wanted to make sure, you know, before we went through with the transfer that it was at least a healthy embryo. So the last conversation we had with him, because everything was, you know, remote at that point, we weren't flying into Colorado for those conversations. He told me that we would have the embryo tested and he'd let me know when I got the results. And maybe 4 weeks later, I think it was about 4 weeks, I had a missed call, which is always the worst when you're going through IVF, is having that missed call from your clinic with the results. So that was all done over a voicemail.
Oh my God. So they left you a voicemail. And what did they say?
Well, they did preface it with, you know, we're going to leave you some sensitive information if you want to hang up and listen to this at a different time, you know. So they did that preface of, you know, don't listen to it while you're, you know, in the middle of something major. But of course, when you've been waiting for this news, I don't care if I was officiating.
Like flying a plane.
I would have been like, okay, we're listening to this. So I was in Minnesota. I was at a corporate work event in the Minneapolis area. And of course I, you know, listened to it. And he said, you know, they tested it and it tested positive for trisomy 16. And that it would never become a viable pregnancy. And his last words on this voicemail were, "I'm so sorry. I know how bad you and Jack wanted this."
Ugh, heart crushing, soul crushing.
You know, it's still like it. I get tears.
I just got the chills. Yeah, because I had PTSD is real. You know, you remember all those disappointments, and I feel like I have so much empathy for people that are going through, you know, any sort of loss or have gone through it. It's still there, right?
Yeah. And that was in 2018. So, I mean, it wasn't yesterday, and there's still, even as far advanced as I am in moving my life forward, there's just a part of that that always will resonate with me. Those words were just like the finality of it.
Right. And then did you guys decide to kind of close that chapter, or what kind of conversations did you and your husband have after that? I'm sure it was not an easy conversation, right?
Yeah. I got on a plane somehow that night and made it back to Chicago because I was supposed to be at this corporate event for a couple of days. And I just felt like I didn't even know what to do. I was like, oh my gosh, like this is not what we expected. So we ended up calling the clinic and scheduling a phone call with the doctor.
Yeah.
Just to close the chapter. And he offered adoption and donor services, that egg donor, and said, you know, think about it, let us know, we can help you with this. And we thought about adoption. It didn't turn out to be the right answer for us. We knew that a donor egg wasn't the right answer for us. And then there was no reason to call back. And then we never heard from them either. So that was where everything ended. And that's, you know, the part of the story that I think so many women are left to navigate this alone. And it's the hardest thing to just think like, oh my gosh, the life that I saw for myself just turned, the light just went black, you know? And it was like, the switch was off and here I was left to figure out who I was going to be in my life without motherhood. And there was no one there to, not even a referral for a therapist. There was no like closing email.
That surprises me that it was just so abrupt and that they weren't even, you know, didn't call to check on you or anything like that. Or like, here's some people you can talk to, or here's a group that might be able to help you. You know, this is such a, the mental gymnastics of this, obviously, as you know, are so intense. And again, I'm like getting the chills, like thinking about it, because it is so hard. So I'm sure that left you feeling just like, so on an island and isolated. And how did you navigate that? Like, what were the immediate first kind of steps you took after making that decision?
Well, I really like isolated myself. I remember not wanting to go anywhere, not wanting to really interact with people, not wanting to tell my story. Like, I had already not talked about it much, even amongst my family. Certain people knew in my family, but it just was so hard for me. I think a lot of it was more the pride thing than them not being willing to listen and be supportive. I have a beautiful, supportive family, but I just felt like such a failure to now say, oh, with all of this money, you know, Colorado was all out of pocket, the hotels, the flights, the rental cars, like the nine yards and the treatments was everything was out of pocket. Like,
right.
Even with all this money, I couldn't figure it out at the known to be best clinic in the world at that time. That was what I knew them to be. So I spent a lot of time just wanting to be alone because I didn't know how to connect with people because I felt like I was the only one. And I think that was really the hardest part. And I remember looking at my marriage and my husband, who was like such a solid rock for me, and thinking like, are we going to make it? Like, is the two of us going to be enough? Are we going to have enough to keep us happy and together and connected for the next 50 or 60 years as a married couple if we don't have kids to tend to and run the practices and raise kids? So there was...
Yeah. Did he feel that as well? Like, were you guys going through kind of a rough patch when you made that decision?
He never shared that with me at the time, but I just remember like our dinner conversations were very mundane. It was like, oh, how was your day? What we're going to do this weekend. Like, it was like every day I felt like we were reading from the same script. Like the conversations were just nothing depth worthy or nothing connective. Intimacy. It was just like, I didn't want to have sex because it just was so painful to think about the fact that like you're having sex and there's no child that you're working towards. Cause you know, that's all you're thinking about for so long is, you know, is this going to be happening for me naturally? Will it be like the miracle that you hear about where people are like, oh my God, like after years of IVF, we finally got pregnant on our own. Like, I just was like, I'm not even playing into that one.
Absolutely.
You know, we didn't necessarily like fight or have like a rough patch, but I just felt a lot of internal guilt that I wasn't more sure and grounded that we would be enough. I think that's where it was. Mm-hmm. So compound that on top of the guilt and shame of not being able to create a child. Mm-hmm. And then my friends who, you know, we're having our girls' nights and they're talking about their kids' stuff and me feeling like, well, shit, I don't fit anywhere.
Right.
You know, I'm like the odd person out. So I retreated and I just kind of stayed on my own island.
Right. Was there a point where you finally did connect with people or did you find a community of people that you could relate to? And I want to talk about the book that you've written, which is amazing and such a great resource for people who are navigating this, you know, from now on. But tell me about how you managed, you know, when you weren't retreating, did you finally find people to connect to?
I did not. So I would go on the same chat groups that I was on. And it was very triggering for me because I felt like everyone was angry. There was some support groups, which in the beginning was helpful to know that I wasn't alone. But I just knew after a couple years of sitting in that space of feeling so alone and feeling isolated, I was like, I got to figure this out. Like, I am not giving the rest of my life up for this.
Mm-hmm.
And I had still kept on a lot of the weight that I'd gained during fertility treatments. And it was the pandemic when that hit and I didn't have my job to escape to, because after I found out I wasn't going to be a mom, I was like, all right, I'm going, you know, full into my career. I was the workaholic. I was the one who would answer emails at 11 at night to be like the good employee, you know, all this stuff. And when the pandemic hit and we didn't have work to go to, I was super like not sure who the hell I was anymore. I felt like I lost my identity. I felt like I was still in this holding pattern of not sure how to start my life again, because you know, you learn that when you're going through IVF or fertility, you're like, okay, like don't plan vacations. Mm-hmm. Don't say yes to the girls' trip because you might be pregnant. So I decided that I was going to start working with a weight loss coach because I was like, okay, I got to get my ass in gear. You know, I was feeling terrible, didn't fit any of my clothes. And turns out she was a life coach. I had zero understanding of what life coaching was, to be honest with you. So she presented me these opportunities to realize that I had been believing a story about myself that was really disempowering. And she was really the first light that went off in my brain of, okay, maybe I can create a new story about what it's like to be childless after infertility.
Okay.
And that's what motivated me to be the person to create this connection that I was so looking for in a way that was empowering and brought women to a place of like, okay, like let's figure this out together. Like let's stop hiding behind what didn't happen for us.
Right.
And giving up our lives to childlessness and infertility, because it's just, it was a sock to just like leave your time passing and like calendar years continuing. And you're just like, I'm not getting any better.
Right. Yes. I'm so glad that you said that. Had you had it in your head that you always wanted to write a book, and tell me about the book that just came out?
No, I had no clue I'd ever write a book, but I started my podcast in 2021, the So Now What podcast. And there is such a beautiful following of people that reach out to me. And I'm just always blown away that people even find the podcast, because like literally my first probably 6 months of episodes are super janky. Like I'm in my closet with the earbuds and, you know, on my laptop recording. Right. But
what was the impetus behind the podcast? Was it just to share your story and to connect with people who did not have kids after infertility?
Yep. I started it in 2021 when I was in my life coach certification. And I was like, okay, like I'm just going to tell my story and see who hears it. And maybe I'm not the only one.
Yeah.
And that's when the emails started coming in like, oh my gosh, like I didn't know someone else was feeling this way. I thought I was the only one. I have no one to talk to. You're the first person who's told my story without me telling it. And I was like, wow, like I thought I was the only person who left a clinic without support. Like people telling me like they never heard back either, you know, that, and I was like, I've got to figure out how to support these people, because we deserve better and we deserve more. So I decided to write a book, and that process took me about 2 years.
Okay.
Also called So Now What?
Yep.
And it's about creating a life you love without the children you always dreamed of. So
yeah.
Although it's focused from a lens of somebody who went through IVF, and I did it with my husband, and a lot of the stories that I tell are threaded through with my experience of that. But it also brings up the common things that women go through that don't have children. Maybe they never met the right partner. Maybe there's an autoimmune condition or some sort of health reason that they didn't have children. So I think it's a beautiful place for women who want to feel as though they belong in their lives and that they have meaning and purpose, even though they didn't have the children they always wanted.
Yeah. And what were the most important things that you wanted to include in the book?
For me, it was talking about your body image, how to forgive your body for not doing what you thought it was going to do.
That's so good. Yeah.
Yeah. Because for me, I think that's for the couple years after my IVF, like I was like not working out. I was eating like shit because I was like
feeling kind of betrayed by your body, right? Or like mad at yourself.
Yeah. That like my body didn't work for me. I'm not showing up for it. And who cares anyway, because it's broken. So body image is the main part of the book. There's kind of three areas that I think are really important. Relationships. So like I told you with my husband, like how do you navigate relationships with your partner, with your friends, with kids, with family, that when you show up to holidays and they're like, okay, any baby news? Like, how do you manage those relationships?
Yeah. Yeah. And can we talk a little bit, sorry, before you go to the third one, can we talk a little bit about the friendships and just, you know, we talk about, you know, navigating female friendships a lot in our fertility rally groups and, you know, the different seasons that people are at, different times in their lives. What are some things you learned in writing the book and just with what you've gone through about, you know, if you have any pro tips about navigating, you know, adult female friendships when you don't have kids and they do?
Well, I think the most common one, whether you're going through fertility treatments or not right now, is being okay saying no. Like when you get that baby shower invite, I skipped baby showers. I did. Mm-hmm. And I felt a lot of guilt about it. I thought, they probably think I'm jealous. They probably think I'm not strong enough, whatever it is. Like if that's what you need to do, do that. Don't feel obligated to show up to things that you can't necessarily find yourself managing through just to please your friends. Because your friends are going to, they're going to understand. Mine did. I have like my same core group. There's four of us. Each of them are moms in their own way, IVF mom, adopted mom, single mom, and me with no kids. Mm-hmm. And they never once questioned, like, I didn't get baby gifts for their kids when their kids were born. It was too much for me.
Yeah.
So being open to yourself and your needs to me is like the most important thing about how to show up in your friendships. Mm-hmm. And then for me, like, we'll still go out and they'll talk about like mom stuff. And I realize now, because of the work that I've done, like, I've got my own value to add to the conversation. Mm-hmm. So just because I don't have a place in every conversation doesn't mean that I'm not worthy of my place in the world. I have other things that I'm excited to add the conversation about that they have nothing to relate to in my conversation.
Right. So that's such a good way to look at it. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, just realizing that you bring a lot to the conversation that doesn't have to be kid-centric. And I know it's hard when that's what you wanted, but that's the work that I do and I work with my clients to do, is to help you get to that point where you're proud of who you are without the things that you thought were going to complete you.
Mm-hmm.
So the friendship part, I think, is, you know, showing up, being open, being honest, and realizing that you're an integral part of that friendship as well.
Yes. I love that so much. Okay. So then the third part of the book, sorry, I interrupted you earlier.
The third part is owning your time, because one of the hardest things when you find out that you're not going to be a mom is those automatic milestones are not in your life. Like, there is no timeline that is there. There is no practice to run the kids to on the weekends. There is no homework, making breakfast, packing lunches, like all these things that you thought were going to be part of your time are no longer there. And it feels suffocating to have to figure out, how are you going to fill your time every day, every week, every year in a way that makes you feel proud and meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
And when you come to work on Monday and everyone's like, oh my gosh, like, Joey won, you know, state championships and I was here and I was there, and people are like, what did you do? And you're like, oh, you know, my husband and I went to a new restaurant and, you know, I volunteered at this da 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 da. And you think, gosh, like, my life sounds so much less meaningful than the people who are doing all these amazing things with their kids. So how do you choose things to do with your life that make you proud and make you feel like you're growing as a human? Because when you have that milestone of parenthood, it's so overwhelming to figure out how to create a life that feels connective and purposeful.
That's so, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, just so perfectly said. And I'd love to hear some specifics about things that you've put into your life to make yourself proud. Like, what are the, you mentioned volunteering, you know, what are some other things that, you know, you've done that you've added that you might not have had time for, or that, you know, you didn't even think about before when you were on that track to have kids?
Well, it takes deliberate noticing and effort, which is the first thing. There's nothing that really comes and taps you on the shoulder and says, oh my gosh, like, I found your purpose and it's going to be, you know, that's like the overwhelming part about being childless after infertility, is that you have to go seek for yourself and want to feel that feeling of connectiveness.
Mm.
So for me, for example, I've been asked to be a godmother to people that I'm sure asked me because they know I didn't have kids, but also because I think they see me as a great role model for their, it's specifically women, for their daughters who've asked me. And I really
don't
take
that
lightly.
That's so awesome. Yeah.
You know? And I'm like, how great that they chose me to be a symbol of something in their kids' lives. So when my goddaughter Leela's home, she goes to Holy Cross out in Boston. So when she's home, you know, I always make time for us to do stuff. I check in on her at school. I, you know,
that's
ask about
so
how
awesome.
The parties are going, how Rush is going, you know, just, and then
and you probably get the good info too.
Oh, I do.
You know,
like,
yeah.
I get all the good
stuff. Get all the tea.
Yes. And then, you know, my niece, who's a sophomore in high school, like, being more active in her life and like showing up to her games and being her cheerleader and her aunt, but also her friend. And so I think things like that are really important. I don't take it lightly when people invite me into the lives of their children, because I know that they're doing it from a loving place, but also because they see me as someone who could be a good role model to their daughter. And what?
Because you're amazing. That's why. Yes.
And then volunteering is something that I really love to do. And I volunteer with a nonprofit. My family's originally from Serbia, and I volunteer with a nonprofit that helps kids in orphanages in Serbia. And so I do a lot of work overseas for them. And then Feed Your Starving Children, which is a local nonprofit in the Schaumburg in Illinois, and do a lot of work with them. So for me, it's finding ways that I feel like I'm making a difference and not waiting for life to come and like tap me on the shoulder. I get involved. And
yes.
I do it because I want to do it. not from
absolutely.
A place of panic.
I love that. I was looking at your Instagram profile and it's like your goal is helping goal-driven infertile women thrive and feel fulfilled without the children they thought they'd have. And I think that's such a great mission statement.
Thank you.
You know, and that's what you, that comes through in everything that you do with the book and with your, you know, social media and with talking about it on podcasts like this. Yes, absolutely. So
my book is my second baby.
Yeah, absolutely. So what do you think? The book just came out, right?
It did. Yes.
What's the response been?
Great. Great. Like, I wasn't sure, you know, it's like one of these things where I'm like, oh, is anyone going to read it? And, you know, of course I'm a self-published author, so I don't have, you know, someone banging on the doors of Barnes and Noble to get my book out.
Yes. We were talking about that before we started recording. The self-published author club. We need to have another conversation about that.
But yeah, it's the people who have read it so far. It's only been out a week, but I did send advanced copies to certain people who I knew would have an interest in reading it early. And I've gotten such great feedback because it's not a book necessarily about me. Like I said, my story weaves in there, but it's a guide to help you figure out how are you going to navigate this. So there's active journal prompts. There's places where you could set the book down, do some writing, kind of figure out what this means to you or how you want to move through this chapter. So I love that it allows for growth on the spot, like while you're reading it, and people can set the book down, do some work, come back to it. And I think it's the first of its kind that I'm hoping fertility clinics will add this to some sort of, or create a resource list for women who are at the end of their treatment path. Because I think we as women who get to that point, when you only hear adoption and donor conception as options, you feel like no one else must leave childless. So I would love that conversation and this to be part of the conversation fertility clinics have to support women and say, you know, if those two options aren't right for you, we still can support you with being childless and now give them an opportunity to support their patients. So that's really my dream with this book, is to allow women to feel supported and recognized when their treatment path comes to an end, because that was probably the most devastating as a patient, to feel like there was nothing for me.
Lana, I'd love to hear your advice for people in that boat where they're not quite sure. What can you say to them about the life that you've chosen? And if they go, you know, that path of not having kids, you know, how they can come to terms with it?
Yeah, well, I think it's just important to recognize that you did the best that you could. And a lot of women continue to push through thinking that if they do something differently, or if they relax more, or they pray harder, or they, you know, do something that will change an outcome. And I want to recognize that no matter what you've been through, like, you showed up as the best version of you at that time. So I think that's really important to see as a patient. And then to recognize that life might turn out differently, but there is so much out there that you can still create with your life, even if it's not through motherhood, and that you don't always have to look at your life as lacking because it doesn't include motherhood. I think a lot of people think that life's going to max out at 80% and you're always going to be missing that piece of the puzzle. And it's just not true. We just don't have enough people leading the way and being examples of what's possible when you're not a mother after infertility.
Thank you so much for listening, guys. Definitely check out Lana's book, which is called So Now What? It's on Amazon. You could just Google it. You can follow her on Instagram at lana.manikowski. Check out my book, which is on my website, which is infertileafgroup.com. It's called Work of Art. And you can follow me at infertileafstories. And also, don't forget to check out Fertility Rally. These are all resources that were created to help you guys, no matter where you're at in your journey. So we're here for you. You are not alone. Sending so much love, and I'll talk to you guys next time.
Six months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. It prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.